ready to go.
Let's do it. All right. And welcome back to A Businessman's Guide to Almost Everything, the show where I, your host, Cole Brzezinski, you get to sit down with interesting folks from interesting fields. We get to pick apart what they do, what motivates them, and some of the things that scare them. So today, Casper Hickman, you are joining me. Tell me, who are you? What do you do? And where are you from?
Yeah. So Casper Hickman, I own real estate media business, Hickman Aerial. Yeah. Primarily focus on real estate agents, taking photos and videos of real estate agents, picture with camera, drone, 3D tour, like 3D camera, all that kind of stuff. And yeah, just focusing here on Whatcom County, Skagit County, and neighboring areas.
Okay. So we talked a little bit about what you do in past episodes. We talked about your current industry space. I want to grill you a little bit today. I want to tear you a new one, as the kids say. I'm not sure if they still say that, actually. Okay. But let's take a look at your space, what you guys do, and why you guys cost so dang much. Because I have at least two realtors that I see very often, and they're always griping to me about how everything in real estate is too expensive, and photography is one of those things that they just won't stop whining about. So tell me, first of all, how much should someone be prepared to pay if they want good photography services? Mm-hmm. Not like the Uber premium, but like good.
Yeah.
How much should they charge?
So it depends. Depends on what you're looking to get out of it. And so like if you're just looking for photos, about $500 or so is good. Mm. If you're looking for more than that, okay. So yeah, if you're looking for photos, about $500. If you want to add on additional services like video or 3D tour, stuff like that, Matterport, for example, like $900,000. If you want to do it all, you know, you got this listing that you want to go all out on. I've had agents spend like $1,500 or so on a listing. Mm. Sometimes that was a little bit outside of my service area, so that part was included. But yeah, so depending on what you can get out of it, depending on, you know, a bunch of different factors, like that's a good approximation for what I would suggest on average pricing.
Okay, so that makes sense. So in those average pricings, then they're coming in packages. When someone's buying one of these packages, what are they buying? What are you doing? What is your process?
Yeah. So $500 includes photos, drone photos, and a 2D floor plan and a marketing kit. So to break that down, photos here in the like upper Northwest section of Washington, we use Northwest MLS, and they allow up to 40 photos for a listing. So that would be 40 photos, like five or more drone photos, depending on what the space allows for, and a 2D floor plan. So like it would be, you know, an image showing kind of the layout of the house, if there's multiple floors, stuff like that. And then marketing kit includes a property website. And so you can send people to a page that's only branded to you, where they can see all of the images in highest resolution, all of the media. And then there's some other extra special things with that marketing kit, including like social media templates that you can use to promote your the listing on social media really quick and easy. So that's the $500 package. Mm. And then I guess compared to like the all out kitchen sink package, that would be, you know, photos, drone, marketing kit, 2D floor plan, a 3D tour. So like think of it as like of like a Matterport. And so like a lot of us are familiar with Matterport during COVID times, where you'd have to like click the discs to walk around. Matterport, it'd be a video, maybe two videos, you know, one video that's horizontal for YouTube and for the listing, like a tour, and then one video that's like vertical for more for social media, more scroll stopping, more attention grabbing. It includes, you know, virtual twilight. We talked about in a previous episode where a picture taken during the day will be edited to make it look like it was taken at night and during twilight, just to give it more, be more attention grabbing. 3D tour. Yeah, I'm sure there's other services, but like going all out. And the biggest value would be like doing those videos, helping agents get on camera, getting more attention to listing, to their business. Which will help
So what are some of the tools that you use then?
Mm-hmm. So I use a camera. So I use a Canon, you know, mirrorless full-size camera, tripod. And I use a level on top of my camera just to make it quicker for me to be able to like level it. It's kind of funny, a little bubble level. For 3D tours, I use like a 360 camera and a monopod tripod. And then software, stuff like that. I use a software on my phone where I can scan the house, like walk around, do a video of the house, and that makes it into like a 2D floor plan. Many people might be surprised, but for video, I use my phone. It's more efficient for the agent, instead of me trying to balance like a camera gimbal, and lets me focus on the story that they're telling, the message versus like how nice the video looks. Because I mean, being real, like most of the time people are just gonna be watching these videos on their phone, maybe their computer. But our, you know, the newest iPhone, the newest Google phone is going to have 4K. So like, going to look just as great as the camera.
So what kind of specs does your phone camera have?
Yeah. I mean, it has, 4K, 60 frames per second, which is good enough for real estate media. Yeah, as far as I know.
No, that's fair enough. It kind of goes to show that, like, for a good camera that lots of people have these days, this is already kind of within the realm of understanding. They can even maybe do some of this themselves.
Yeah, and also with the camera phone, the phone gimbal, and a microphone. And so, like, phone gimbal to make the video smooth instead of, like, you know, trying to walk the camera or the phone. And, like, it looks all bumpy. Phone gimbal is going to help with that. And then the microphone, just to help the agent have better quality audio, which is half the production of a video.
Yeah, that's one of those things that people don't often realize, that people are actually willing to tolerate a lot when it comes to visual fidelity, but people are very sensitive to audio fidelity. If something is not nice to listen to, that is actively aggravating and people will leave.
Interesting. Okay.
We've learned this.
Yeah. I mean, like, you think about it, like, you know, I guess a lot of my time is spent understanding social media and Instagram, specifically Facebook too. But yeah, like half of the tips and like half the process is just making sure you have good quality audio. It doesn't have to be fancy. Like, when you're out in the field, like, we don't need mics like this, that are super quality. Clip-on mic. Personally, I use like a mic where there's like a cable that goes up to like your little like clip on your collar. Just the closer to your voice, the better quality. So it's super mobile. Just doing that is going to set you apart from most other people, because most people don't do that. I mean, it takes like 5 minutes, but just doing that, getting connected to your phone, is really going to help you step up. In your video game.
So when it comes to the back end, because we have like 2D floor plans, we're putting together these virtual tours, probably comes with a lot of like software that you got to use as well. Is that right?
Yeah. So I subscribe to a software that makes it very seamless on the front end for agents. And so like, if you were to go to my website, hickmanariel.com, then there's a book now button where it'll take you to my booking page. You'll see all my services, be able to schedule with me, book online, all that kind of stuff. And the software that I use manages all that. And so, it creates an invoice automatically. It delivers the images automatically. So like for the photos, like let's say we're doing a shoot today, tomorrow at 10 o'clock, you get an email with the photos ready. There'd be links to all of the, you know, if there's a video, all this kind of stuff, there'd be links in that email. In the email, you'd be able to click the pay now button where you can pay the invoice, and then that unlocks all of the images, all the media. So it's a tool that helps both of us, where helps me with being able to provide the media, have it ready to go so that when the invoice is paid, it's ready. You can have all of your projects together. Let's say we did like 10 projects together. You can log into your account, see all the projects. Let's say you wanted to go back and, you know, get media from a project we did 2 months ago. to do like a just sold. You don't have to go through your inbox, like find a Dropbox link. Yeah. Hope that the photos are still in there. You know, it's the software makes it easy for all parties.
Okay. So let's talk about the good and the bad when it comes to realtor media specialists, because we talked about how you don't just do, you did photography at a time and that was all you did, but then you've had a, as the markets change, you've had to expand a little bit. So when realtors are looking for media specialists, what are the tells that they're working with someone or that they're interviewing someone who's probably got it figured out, that's probably on top of it?
Yeah, I think for the most part, I would say that most real estate media professionals out here do quality that's good enough. And I think about it, I guess she's going a little tangent, but I mean, okay, I guess taking a step back, the you were talking about like, why would agents want to spend money and invest in real estate media and photos? If you think about it, like when somebody's going to a house nowadays, they're going on Zillow or wherever, like the pictures are what sell the house and the pictures are what introduce people to the house. I mean, all the rest of the stuff helps, but you know, that first picture that a lot of times it's going to be the front of the house, you know, the curb appeal type stuff. That's what gets people interested. And I forgot what I was going with that. Remember your question again?
All good. How can a realtor know when they're starting to begin a relationship with a media production specialist that they're dealing with someone who has their best interests at heart, who's going to do a good job? How do they tell who the winners are?
Yeah. So as I was saying, like most of us do good enough quality that the pictures are going to look professional. So like there's a bar that needs to be reached, and anything above that bar isn't really going to be noticed by, you know, clients, buyers, stuff like that. And so I guess number one, just making sure that their media is up to the level that it's good enough, and good enough is good. You know, trying to get amazing, maybe for those luxury listings is fine, but also otherwise, like it's attention put into somewhere that's not going to have as big a reward. So I think, and most importantly for a real estate agent, like they want, you want to find somebody that you connect with and that you, yeah, like you can, you enjoy being around. And so it's more about the personality than everything else.
Right.
And so like somebody that, like if you were to reach out to and have a question about, like they're going to be happy to help you versus, you know, maybe somebody that's, you know, like stressed out or, you know, unfriendly or something. So yeah, most of us do great quality work, and then you have the option, since there's a lot of real estate agents have the option, since there's a lot of people, real estate media businesses out there, you can find a person that you connect with and that you enjoy working with.
So inversely, how does someone know upon that first meeting that this media specialist is not going to work out for me? They're either not going to do the job well enough, or I just know that we're not going to work together well.
Yeah. I mean, in some cases it's price, right? Like the price might be either too much for you at this time. I say at this time, it might be too much for you at this time. Or yeah, the quality might not be good, or just, like your specific energies don't mesh well. Like I've had that experience with some agents, some clients where like our just energies didn't mesh. Either like sometimes they just don't value my time and they don't value my expertise. Or they just like have a specific need that doesn't, that I can't provide, or, yeah. So I think, and a lot of kind of like I was talking about in a previous episode where, like during that first shoot, I'm also interviewing them. And they're like, while they're interviewing me, like when I first started, I would do, what's it called? Like I would offer like a discount on my services or free photos or something, as a way to get in front of that agent and, you know, see if they liked working with me, if they liked my process. And I was also interviewing them being like, oh, am I excited to work with this person? Like, do I like their energy? Do they trust me to do my work? Yeah. So like kind of what you were asking, if a real estate agent, like maybe they do one job with this photographer, like do you trust them to do the work, or like do you get the pictures back and like they don't look right. And then if you ask questions, like, you know, there's like, oh, there's a reshoot fee, or
yeah,
like they don't want to make changes or all that kind of stuff. So just, yeah, being able to, yeah, have your energies mesh. And
I like how you emphasize a particular point in there, though, because we've learned this lesson ourselves, where if you're having a consultation with a new client, it is as much an interview of you as it is of them. And of course, that's in part because, you know, they want to make sure you do good service and you want to make sure that they're serious clients and all that. But you don't have to take everyone who comes to you. Mm-hmm. And it's also a great negotiating tactic, because when you say at the beginning of an interview, like, hey, this is going to be a discovery interview where we're going to explore who we are, we're going to mm-hmm. see what the project scopes are. And if we are interested, then we will offer you mm-hmm. a bid. Then we will offer you our services. Because like right there, you're already setting up the standards of saying you aren't the one that has all the authority in this mm-hmm. situation. We do actually have a say, because we want to work with people that, A, want good products, because that's mm-hmm. what we make, and two, that are interested in fostering a good relationship. That's two ways. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of people that, if you're not willing to put up those boundaries, they'll come for your services and they will use you up as much as they can. Mm-hmm. So like on that note, are you willing to share us some horror stories of working with bad clients?
Let's see. I think just kind of going off that, like for me, I get the most enjoyment with work and with this kind of stuff by like working with people that enjoy working with me. Mm-hmm. Let's see, thinking about challenging stories. I guess just like one horror story was working with a client that, didn't value my time. Mm-hmm. And like, this was a job that was on San Juan Islands where, like there's communication about like, okay, so I'm going to charge, you know, to get out there, travel fee, travel time, stuff like that. And then I did the job. This is for a free shoot. And so I was there for a long period of time. This is when I was newer in the business.
Right.
And, they thought that they were doing me a service by letting me come out and take pictures of their, you know, $2-3 million house.
Right.
Cause like, these are going to be pictures that you can use in your portfolio, which is kind of true, but also like doesn't pay the bills. I was out there for the full day.
Right.
Right. So that, something that I learned now is like the opportunity cost of not being able to take a shoot back at home. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I sent over the bill and like they were shocked that I charged like a couple $100 to travel out to San Juan's and back.
Yeah.
They're like, oh, I thought we were just going to pay you for the ferry ticket. And so that was a good experience for me, like a learning opportunity to be like, okay, I need to be more clear upfront about travel fees and just like the amount of time it takes. Yeah. So I have had since I had jobs out there on San Juan Islands, which I'm okay with taking, but just, having the clarity to understand that like, you know, it takes an hour to get to Anacortes from Bellingham, you know, takes an hour to get on the ferry. You have to get to the ferry early. Otherwise you might lose your reservation. You know, ferries might not be on time. They might delay.
Yep.
You don't know how long the shoot's going to take. So like, there's a lot of, you know, there's a level of flexibility that needs to be there. Mm. Yeah. And I did a bid out for a job out in San Juan's that's maybe coming up the next couple of weeks. And I had more context on how much like time and energy and stuff that it would take to get out there. And so. Mm.
So continuing on with that line of thought with being new into the industry, mm-hmm. and you're willing to do jobs that you probably normally would not have. What was it like starting out? What did you have to do to grow your startup business?
Yeah. So I had to take a lot of shoots. Like I had to do those type of interviews of, you know, offering free shoot for a client so that they could try me out, learning new skills. I had to learn how to do video, like those walkthrough videos. You know, I didn't offer 3D tours at the time and I had to invest in like a 360 camera. Mm. It was like $1,000. So just a lot of like upfront costs, a lot of upfront learning, figuring like going through these experiences of finding clients that are not super excited to work with me. And then finding clients that after I deliver the photos, they're super excited to like keep working with me and tell their friends. Mm. So it's, in some ways, like it was nice. In some ways, it was just interesting to kind of see the type of clients that liked my work and that I liked their work. Mm-hmm. And I was thinking, like, in the beginning, you don't know what you don't know. And it's sometimes for the best, right? Like, you don't know how hard it's going to be. Mm-hmm. That was 2024. And apparently, like, the market was, like, the housing market here in Washington and Whatcom County and stuff was tough. So there's fewer listings where, as a real estate provider, real estate media provider, like, bread and butter is listing media, yep. like photos and stuff like that. So it was a rough year of fewer listings. Mm. Yeah. But I mean, it was a lot of me doing new stuff, like going to the Whatcom County of Realtors golf event for the first time and like trying to get out in front of agents and yeah, just try to meet new people as much as I can. Mm.
Yeah. Cause you and I met via networking mm-hmm. and it seems like networking is kind of hard to beat. It's not ever going to get you in front of the most people, but people remember you a lot better mm-hmm. once you start networking.
Yeah.
Yeah. So what's your experience with networking been? Like, is that your number one form of marketing, or as a media specialist, mm-hmm. have you found that there are other avenues to bring in those cold leads?
Yeah, I think it's part of it. And it really depends on where you're at. Mm-hmm. So like where you're located. So here in Bellingham and Whatcom County, like my primary area that I would like to work is like Bellingham area. Mm. Just cause like shorter drive time, like Blaine, Birch Bay is fine, but it's half an hour to 45 minutes away.
Same. Yeah.
I've done a bunch of listings in Glacier. That's 45 minutes away. And so like here in Whatcom County, I think it's all part of a cohesive whole of marketing. Mm. So there's like, we talked about, there's like Instagram where you're commenting, interacting with agents in town. And then they might show your work to some of their friends. Mm. I did like open houses where if agents were doing an open house, I would go to their open house and like introduce myself. Which is interesting. Cause like it feels when I did the first couple, like it felt so weird. It's like, I felt like they were going to be mad at me, which they're not. You know, obviously like if there's a lot of people in there, then that's a different experience of like, hey, just introducing myself. I see you're busy. Like, you know, I'd love to meet up at some point versus like, if there's nobody there, like, you know, it's okay to chat with them for like 10, 15, 20 minutes.
Yeah.
The first one or two, like the first one I was there for like 45 minutes or an hour, just hanging out. And then, yeah, going to like the Realtor Association events, doing brokerage presentations where, that's something I was really trying hard to do last year was go into an office and like present on something. It could be about my business. It could be about I did an educational presentation about like what are Zillow 3D tours, stuff like that.
Right.
So just my goal last year, my focus was just on getting in front of agents physically. Mm. You know, which complements getting in front of them, you know, virtually via social media.
Mm. Yeah, I remember I was talking to someone. Oh gosh. I'm trying to think how many times it was, but they were explaining that normally for your average client, if you're trying to become someone that they think of, that they associate for a service, you have to be in front of them. It's, oh gosh, depending on the time frame, it's either like 7 times mm-hmm. over the course of a week, every day, like once a day for 7 days, mm-hmm. or you got to be seen by them by like 35 times. And at that point they start to remember you. And even that's still like over the course of 6 months, it's a continuous effort.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which is, it's work. It's not fun.
Yeah. Like I've heard of the, you know, like you have to be in front of them like 7 times just in general. Either way, just like, you know, the more you're in front of them and like, you know, the idea of like social proof, right?
Yeah.
Like, so, I think that has been, you know, part of it is, getting referrals from other agents, having that social proof of like doing jobs for other agents and then, you know, posting it online or having listing live and then just being like, oh, so other, you know, you did a good job for them. Like, I'll happy to give you a try.
Mm.
Yeah, just a whole, like instead of doing just only social media or only going in person, having a cohesive strategy, maybe like open houses, is worthwhile. I don't do that as much now as far as like open houses because of having, you know, a baby that's, she just turned one in May. And so I'm being very focused, being very deliberate with where I, trying to be very deliberate about where I spend my time.
So. Right. Of course. Yeah. So let's continue on with new realtors are coming to you. Mm-hmm. They're interested in your services. What are some of the common misunderstandings that they often have about your kind of work?
I think nowadays, it's kind of a hard question to ask. Mm. Because nowadays, I think majority of agents understand that like professional photos are required, or at least like they're the standard. I guess one myth sometimes I get is that like just the photos are good enough, or like I'll have agents that'll just sometimes order photos. And so I'll ask them like, hey, do you want to do drone photos or any of this other stuff? And they're like, no, I'm good. Just photos is fine. Which is okay. Right. Like it's their, you know, business. It's their, they can pick and choose for that reason what they want to do. I guess one thing that I've seen recently, or at least sometimes, is like some agents, maybe they have their own drone and then they'll take the drone pictures themselves, but they're not licensed and they don't have like drone insurance. And, which is like a $10,000 up to a $10,000 fine for every occurrence.
Yep.
So if you like, you know, if anybody tries to fly their drone for
commercial purposes specifically.
Yeah. So, and commercial is explained as anything that could in any way earn you any money.
Yeah. They're pretty tight on it.
Yeah. So basically if you're not doing it for fun and you're in some way going to post it online, that's going to be get you revenue. Like, every single time you do that is up to a $10,000 fine. Mm. So,
and drone insurance, I don't think people realize it. Drone insurance is hard to get. And when you do find someone that's willing to offer it, it is expensive.
I mean, I pay $45 a month for mine.
What?
Yeah.
Okay. Don't tell anyone, but the insurance I paid for my drone, which is a, for granted, it's a little bit heavier. It's a little bit bigger. I paid more for my insurance than I did for my drone.
Okay. All right, well, I'll have to tell you which one I use, but yeah.
Yeah, no, because I want to know that.
But it's just, I mean, and for some people, so there's the drone insurance that I use, like you can pay by the hour or whatever, or you can just get a subscription. Mine is like $45 a month.
That is interesting. Yeah, I do want to know a little bit more about that then.
But I mean, for me, it helped unlock like the ability to be more, adventurous with my drone stuff, where it's like they have like liability insurance, and like I mean I fly it at least like almost like every day or like every work day, sometimes twice a day. Basically like majority of the shoots that I do have drone in them, either that be photo or video.
Right.
So
no, it's increasingly becoming a normal thing for people in our lines of work to have. They're also the coolest toys.
Yeah. I mean, I get, well, oftentimes I'll get people that are asking about the drone or like when I'm doing the drone at a job, they'll be interested. Sometimes I've seen like in the Facebook community of people that are doing the drone, there'll be like, you know, people that are watching an operator like myself and they'll be like very curious or think we're doing something like nefarious. There have been people in the community where like one or two have had their drone shot down by like a homeowner.
Yeah.
It's not good. And it's a, you know, a legal issue. I did have a job in Mount Vernon where like I was in this, I was in a housing community. Like all the houses were like built right next to each other. Mm. And I was flying for a drone. I had my like work shirt on and my hat on. And I was there for maybe like 20 minutes flying the drone, like doing my video for the house. And then I had some kids that were coming up and like, then like a lady was coming up and she was like, what are you doing? And I was like, oh, this house is on the market. Like, I'm just taking some video of it to make a video. And then like, she, I forget the specifics, but like, she didn't believe me. And so I was like, do you have a card? I was like, I have a business card. Like, here's my info. Like, here's my business card and stuff. And then, you know, she thought that it was okay, which is kind of weird because anybody can make their own card.
Yeah. It really doesn't mean anything.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
We had a similar thing actually. And it was one of our first bigger jobs when we were working with one of the local cities here. And same thing. We were We had a drone. It was over a public space. And so some people just get antsy about that. And we had a few people come over to us. It's like, what are you doing here? It was like, oh, we're making a video. It was like, who are you working for? Are you working for the city? It was like, actually, yes. So that was always fun. But no, people are still becoming a bit accustomed to the fact that there are now consumer and prosumer drones that are just kind of in and about, and we don't know how to respond to that, which it's fair. I mean, it's weird. Very clearly a tool to invade people's privacy with.
Yeah, it can be used, again, for nefarious purposes. I mean, like, at least from my perspective, like, a lot of times it's pretty obvious. Like, coming out, taking video pictures and stuff. But I guess those are, like, I've had a couple experiences, like, where I was flying around with the drone, or, like, I was walking around a neighborhood and, like, the drone was really far away. So people, like, think it's weird that I'm, like, walking around their neighborhood.
So let's come back to something we were talking about a little bit earlier with some, like, the challenges with being in your field specifically. As a business owner, you're always in the school of hard knocks. Learning from mistakes, learning from opportunity costs. What has been one of the hardest lessons that you have learned in your years of running Hickman Aerial?
Good question. I think, one lesson that I'm working on learning is, I think we talked about it in the past, in a different episode, is just recognizing the value that we provide. I mentioned a book that I talked about in the previous episode, Buy Back Your Time. Where am I going with this? I'm going that, like, it takes a lot of education, and it takes a lot of times we don't know what we don't know. And I think it's a scary place to be. It's a scary place as a business owner, like, when I first started and, like, went full time, where it's like, you know, am I going to be able to make enough money to pay bills and pay rent and all that stuff?
Yeah.
Thankfully I was on unemployment. And so I was able to have 6 months of unemployment pay so that I could build up the business, which is a lifesaver. But just not having, where am I going?
Not having that reliable income. That's a big thing to give up.
Not having the reliable income to give up. And then needing to, I guess, just trust the vision and being okay to try things out and not, it's being okay to try things out and step away and course correct, right? Mm-hmm. Like, think of it as, like, you're a big ship, and it's like, it's okay to go, you know, slightly one direction or the other, and, like, figure out that it's not the direction you want to head. So and I was thinking of this as I was driving up here, reflecting on, like, the past year, sometimes taking projects that are outside of my, like, focus or foundation or whatever, of, like, taking, you know, outside projects outside of real estate, and that may be interesting or fun, but realizing that it's just too far outside of what I want to do. Just getting a little bit too far outside of my goal of, like, real estate media, small business media.
No, that's solid. All right. Well, that's all of our time for this episode. So, Casper, where can people find you?
Cool. So, website is www.hickmanaerial.com. There's a book now button at the top right. And Instagram is Hickman_aerial, and Facebook on there too.
All right. Well, thank you, everyone, for joining us for another episode of A Businessman's Guide to Almost Everything. We hope that you've enjoyed this episode as much as I have. Until next time, though, take care, be well, but be sure to come back, because next time we're actually going to hear Casper's story and how someone just kind of fell into becoming a media specialist.
Okay.
How that happens. All right. Awesome. Well, until we see you next time, take care and be well. Cool. Bye.
Thank you, guys.